Welcome. It is May the 8th. I want to give an early birthday shout out to my big sister. Tomorrow's her birthday, so happy birthday to you. And happy birthday to all of the Tauruses out there. It's Taurus season, and I do try to remember to give a shout out to all of the people who have birthdays coming up. And so, anyway, sending that shout out for all the birthdays, guys. We've got a great show tonight. I want to welcome you all. Thank you for tuning in. As always, thank you for being loyal and faithful listeners. I appreciate it. I couldn't do it without you. And so, guys, we have a great show tonight. We have Pete Moses here with Black Lives Matter of Memphis. And so we've got a great show lined up. She's going to be telling us about her organization and what they're doing here in the Memphis area and some of the things that they have going. And, guys, you may want to be involved in it and get active with what she has going on. It is a movement, and so you definitely want to be involved if you want to make a difference. And so without further ado, let me introduce my guest. Welcome to the show, P. Moses.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for taking out time. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good, good. Thank you for taking out time. I know that you have a lot of things going on, and, you know, you have a lot of meetings going on. But I want you to tell my listeners about, well, the name of your organization and what the mission is of your organization.
Okay, well, I'm with Black Lives Matter Memphis, and our mission, in the spirit of the birth of the Civil Rights Movement, Black Lives Matter Memphis' principal objective is to progress and ensure the protection of all Black lives, regardless of gender, disability, levels of education, socioeconomic status, political beliefs, sexual orientation. And our organization basically promotes Black unity to achieve equality amongst all of our citizens. We hope to eliminate systematic oppression through awareness, education, and demand for betterment and change for the Black lives here in Memphis. That's what our mission is. And our vision is basically Black liberation. And we're working on a number of things, but right now we're focused on this Rise Up North Memphis campaign, which we didn't really want to enact until probably July. But things have taken place in the past probably 90 days that leads us to believe that we need to move quickly, not just from a national level, but especially from a local level. We recently had an election where less than 25,000 people or less than 30,000 people within a city and county population of 1 million came out to vote in the primary election. And that is just horrible because mm-hmm. our representation, you know, is determined by our population.
Hello.
And, you know,
yeah.
10 years they do a census. They do that federally for a reason because the appropriation and allocation of funds that people receive within their community is determined based on your race
mm-hmm.
and your national where you live and how many people are in that particular district. And so
mm-hmm.
if only 1% of the people are going out to make the determination of who is going to be elected on a local level and a state level, that essentially means that you will have a minority disproportionately controlling things in a city that is the predominantly Black and majority population. So it's basically like a seesaw.
Yeah.
All the folks is on the end of the seesaw with the one other person or entity that's in the air, and we're all just at the bottom. So we're trying to rise up, and we're beginning the campaign in North Memphis because of three things that took place. Me, and I'm sure everybody knows Mama Peaches, she's a South Memphis ambassador, and she leads our Butterfly Healing Committee. We were both verbally attacked by some Middle Easterns at a store on Summer, and after that happened, the police were called, and, you know, they realized that we had not done anything wrong. So so, you know, nothing came of it. But the trauma in which, you know, we experience daily from the disrespect and the disregard of who we are as persons in our own communities by the people we're doing commerce with has become a systematic problem. So it's time for us to do something about it as citizens. And after we had that altercation, we were able to move forward to a mediation because of our connections to some of our Muslim allies. But 20 days after the mediation occurred, Dorian Harris was murdered at the Top Stop shop on Springdale, which is essentially connected, like most of the other convenience stores, to a group of people who have come to this country, I guess, for a better way of life or whatever, but they have come to this country in a way that has systematically disadvantaged us as Native Americans who have been here our whole lives. We're not entitled to the same benefits, entitled to the same consideration. They're able to come and get convenience stores and gas stations on major streets, but we can't even get a loan for a new car, you know? So, and we've been here our whole lives, and we were, and it's because of the things that we don't know about. So in the Rise Up North Memphis campaign, our goal is to not only make people aware and informed of the things that they should know, but to mobilize and organize a community of people who want better and demand better for North Memphis.
Okay, all right. Now, so you're talking about the things that your organization is doing in efforts to Dorian Harris. Now, and I totally understand, because you see this in a lot of urban communities where you have another nationality kind of running the government of a city that's mostly African American. And so that's kind of prevalent in most urban communities. And do you think it has an effect because we don't get out and vote for the people in those positions, and that's how they get those positions?
Well, the are you talking about the merchants or the actual representatives?
Well, yeah, the representatives, and then too, do you feel like the representatives that come into play allow those vendors to come into the community?
Yes, because they basically keep us stagnant. And if you can keep a group of people stagnant and satisfied and content with being in poverty, then you can control them. And there's no growth. What you see is, if you look around the city at places that are just as old as North Memphis, or just any, I'm not going to call them urban, but we're going to say black communities in the hood. If you look around the neighborhood, you see a trend. If I go to Cooper and Young, I see a house that's just as old as the house in Hollywood or Hyde Park. But those neighborhood associations and those people that live in those communities have worked to preserve not only the history, but the integrity and the where they make sure that it's okay and that it's renovated. It's kept
so they take pride.
Ma'am?
They take pride in where they live.
Yeah, exactly. That's
kind of like taking pride in where you live.
Yeah, the reason black people don't take pride in where they live is because they've been there. They're trapped. We're in a city where it takes you 20 to 30 minutes to drive from downtown to Germantown. And so that means that you have to have a car to get there. It takes you 20 minutes to get from North Memphis to East Memphis. But we have a city that wants to cut off the transportation that we have, and they don't even want to invest in light rail because they say it's too dense. Well, most places that have a population as large as us have already invested and have already achieved what you need to mobilize or stabilize a community or a city of this size. If you look at St. Louis, they have 300,000 in the city. It's just as dense as Memphis. I don't care what anybody says. I've been there. I've lived there. If you go to Atlanta, they have 400,000 people in the city. We're not talking about the county. We're talking about in the city. So what does the city do in 1977? They come up with the MARTA because they don't want people to be trapped in their neighborhoods. They want people that's in College Park to be able to get to Southwest Atlanta through public transportation. Yeah. So you have an option to do better if you choose to. You don't have to stay in the neighborhood you live in. You can go work here. Mm-hmm. You can go move here. But in Memphis, they want to keep poor black folks trapped in communities without grocery stores, without proper health care, without big stores, you know, chains like Walmart, where you can get things. Mm-hmm. We're not saying I support Walmart, but if you look at our neighborhoods where we pay twice as much in taxes, because we pay city and county, and you compare it to a neighborhood in the city somewhere else, it's not the same. Even in East Memphis, they have, you know, businesses that you can have a variety of. They're not businesses in our neighborhood because they've all tried to get away because all these stores have come in and they've taken over. They sell you a pack of cigarettes two for a dollar. You know, oh, we think that's good that we could get single cigarettes, but you're buying cigarettes, you're buying beer. You can get a beer, but you can't get a banana. And it's like we don't understand that they're not trapping us in our neighborhoods. They're poisoning us in the process. So that's why we have decided that we've had enough. We were dealing with you poisoning us internally and externally without us really knowing it. But now that you have decided that you're going to kill one of our children because they try to say he stole a beer, but I saw the tape. He pulled the gun on him before he even grabbed the beer. So the fact that they think that they can come into our neighborhood, rob us for all the little food stamps and welfare that we got, and then turn around and kill us against the rule of law in which this country is supposed to abide by, we can't allow it to happen again. So we must shut this store down. We must shut it down.
Yeah.
And we can't do it by ourselves. We need some help. We need some like-minded people who are just as fed up as we are and says we're not taking it no more. Even if you can't come out there and protest, we need people to stop shopping at these stores. If you don't have to.
Yes.
Now, some of them are respectful, but the main ones who are connected to each other and have this racketeering, because that's what it seems like to me, because people go in the store and they don't even buy anything, but they come out with money. So, you know, I don't know what that's about, but we got to stop as people patronizing businesses that not only don't respect the black dollar, but don't respect our lives.
Our communities, because are these stores given back to the community? Are they investing in the community? That's the main thing, too. I want to go back in the day because, you know, when you had businesses within the black community, they were usually black-owned businesses that did something within the community because they lived in the community. And these people, do they even live in the community?
Owns that store. He has a $250,000 house out in Germantown. And he doesn't live here. He doesn't put any money back in the community. He thinks because he pays the vagrant to sweep his parking lot that he's given back to the community. They don't reciprocate not even a half of 1% of the wealth that they attain. And some of them have little schemes going where they charge you 34 cents for gas and you don't get any gas. And they do that at 7 pumps all day, every day. And at the end of the week, that's $100,000 if you got 5 gas stations that you have achieved revenue from that you don't even have to report because you didn't even really give the person any gas. And they're making that kind of money to send back to their countries to send for more people to come and take over our economic growth development process in our own community. If those stores or if any of those businesses were owned by people within the community or a CDC or someone who lived in the community, that person would essentially be putting money back into the community to build the community back up. But none of that money ever comes back to the people who give it to them.
Wow. So what steps are you all taking to bring some awareness, and what steps are you taking to as action to shut these stores down?
Well, we're taking direct action right now. We're in the prerequisite stage where we're in a meeting and negotiation stage with these same people that we're talking about. But in the meantime, we have people who go out there during their peak hours that hold signs, including myself, and basically boycott the store and encourage other people to boycott. We're getting ready to do a door-to-door campaign in this community where we're going to be getting people mobilized, not only to tell them not to shop at the store, but to find out what their needs are so we can have our petition together when we go to other entities in the city to say, look, this is the information that we have received based on our efforts to mobilize and to build a consensus of what we need in our community. So that way, because you elected officials don't come and see what we need, we've taken the initiative to do it for you, and now this is what we need. Go do what we need you to do, your job.
Yes, yes, yes. And you do have to go to your elected officials because that's the only part. Because, see, they're the ones that give them a working and business permit to even do business within your community. So you got to go to your representatives that represent your community to stop them from giving them those licenses to conduct business within your neighborhood. And so that's a community action, and door-to-door is really going to work because now you can get petitions and you can have people to sign petitions, you know what I'm saying, and then get those signatures, you know, to get some movement on your elected officials. Okay, I'm going to take a caller. Caller, last four digits of your phone number is 3794. You're live on the air. You have a question or comment? Caller? Okay, maybe they just wanted to call in and listen. Okay, well, that's fine, too. Some people just want to call in and listen, so that's fine. Okay. All right, so let me ask you this. Now, what is happening right now within the community since this tragedy has happened? What are you hearing from people? Because I remember, and I mean, it was a good thing there was no rioting. I know that, you know, in some situations like this, you get rioting and different things like that. So what has been taking place within the community since this tragedy?
Well, the reason the store hadn't been burnt down yet is because me and several other people have stopped certain people from doing that because we don't think that that needs to take place, you know. But, you know, we can only do so much once emotions are involved and you're talking about a dead child. So that's why it's important that people support this campaign. We're basically meeting with other people in the community, including pastors that have neighboring churches, and we're trying to organize an effective campaign, not only to give the awareness about what happened, but to also get people to know that there are people that care in this community, because it seems like the consensus is most people are not cool with what happened over here, but at the same time, they feel like, what can we do? You know what I'm saying? What can we do? They got the person who did it, like, well, the owner didn't do it, but it's a bigger, like, the situation with Dorian was the catalytic moment of North Memphis. One or two things are going to happen. Either people are going to get on board with the plan we are developing for the community, or the people who are oppressing us and don't care about us are going to implement their own plan. Two things are going to happen. Either we come up with what we want for our community, a vision of peace and harmony and revitalization and stabilization and elimination of blight, elimination of crime. Either we come up with a way to do that for ourselves, or they will do it for us, even if it means gentrifying us and moving us all the way out to East Memphis like they did to folks in Foot Homes and coming in and taking all the property and making it for them. It's happened already. So that's the important thing that we get out.
Now, you know, back in the day, you know, I know times have changed, but, you know, I go back in history because, you know, this is where the Black Panther Party came about, because they saw a need within the community, and women in the community started feeding the children, and then you got the Black Panther Party, okay? And so it seems like everything that takes place when it's a big movement like that is the people in the community that get behind it. That means that yeah. people in the community, you have to watch out for your neighbor. That's the way it used to be back in the day. You, if you went out of town, mm-hmm. you talked to your neighbor, and your neighbor watched your property and vice versa, you the neighbors had their back. Today's time, I don't even know my neighbors, you know, where I stay
yeah.
now. You know, I don't even yeah. know my neighbors. So I don't know if I left, if they would rob my house, or if they would watch out for my house and call the police, because I don't know them. But this mm-hmm. is where we are in 2018, where we're not getting out and we're not knowing the people that are within our community.
That's why this door-to-door campaign is going to be important, because we're even going to also, once we receive the full amount of funding, we're going to enlist people from the community to participate in the campaign. And it wouldn't just be volunteer work. They would actually be getting paid to do this work, because if we're going to build our community, we must first feed our community. We can't feed our community mm-hmm. if they don't have any money and they don't have basic things like gas and food and things to do that. So we have to use community resources to, you know, pull together to help each other, because there are a lot of things out there for people. But what I've learned a vast majority of the people I encounter, they just don't know how to get it. You know, I was at a meeting the other night with a really good group that's out of North Memphis called Memphis Lifts with Miss Sarah. And there was a lady there that was trying to explain to this pastor why she didn't go vote. And, you know, I thought she was going to say something like she just didn't want to. But she was like, well, my health wouldn't allow me to, and she wasn't able to go. So, you know, I told her, well, you know, you can fill out an absentee ballot. She didn't know what an mm-hmm. absentee ballot was. We sometimes take for mm-hmm. granted that that they know things that they should know because we know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people who are in impoverished and redline communities, they don't know where to get the mm-hmm. low interest loan or the grant to buy a house. So they're renting for $700 a month when they could buy a house and pay insurance and utilities for that same amount. I saw Frazier with a sign that said, why rent for $780 when you can buy for $420? And I was just like, that was really mm-hmm. catchy. You know, I said, that was really good mm-hmm. that they did that for their community, because if you drive through Frazier, there are lots of houses out there vacant, decent houses mm-hmm. that people who are renting could essentially fix up for cheap and pay for and own in a few years, because they don't cost as much as a brand new house. But there are people that don't know that. All they know is they need somewhere to stay. Let me just pay the rent, man. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to change that mentality.
And too, you know,
we can't change the...
Exactly.
Go
and
ahead.
You have to educate the people. You have to educate the people, because, you know, we have been, African-Americans have been kept ignorant when it comes to money. And unless you get out and around people who have money, that's how you learn. If you're only in your neighborhood, then you're just going to learn what your neighborhood knows about money, or what those that you associate know about money. So if the people that you deal with don't know about wealth, and net worth, assets, liabilities, and they only know about a hustle, that's what you're going to know. And so, you know, you have people out there, and that's what they're doing because that's what they know. And that's why we have to educate people when it comes to politics and the voting and stuff, because a lot of people, they just want to go and vote for a president. And I tell them all the time is that your local government affects your state government affects your federal government. So you probably want to start on the local level, because that's where you deal with your judges, your police officers, and different things like
that.
The
sheriff, the DA, and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't know that. And you know why they don't know it? Because they took civics out of school, and they don't explain the importance of it anymore. You've got youth that are graduating, and they could actually have voted in this last election, but they don't even know why they should. And, you know, they're teaching our children not to care about it either. So that's why it's becoming more prevalent mm-hmm. if the 20 and 30-year-olds are voting,
because nobody told the 40 and 50-year-olds,
why they should do it, or they just don't do it. So they lead by example. They're following what they see. You know, I was so honored to ask about some of the work that we do. I was so honored to be able to go to White Station, participate with the walkout that they had with the kids. And I was so so encouraged, because White Station is a public school, and those children are going to change the world because they have so many over there that understand why they should vote. But if you come to some other public schools, it's not the same response because of where White Station is located. What they put into White Station, it's only certain schools that they really push the important things to. And when it comes to our children, we let people teach our children. They won't even send their children to school with our children. They don't let us teach their kids. Do you see them bringing their kids to our neighborhoods that we can teach them? No.
Well, but you know, they're in the school. They're at those PTA meetings. And so, and that's where we fall off, because, you know, come middle school and high school, parents fall off. And they're not at those PTA meetings finding out what's going on with the school and what the kids are learning and going to those conferences and stuff. I was in the school system, and it saddened me how many parents didn't show up to even get the report card.
Wow.
Like, they had no concern of what a child was even making, if they were learning, if they weren't learning. And it wasn't one of the worst neighborhoods for a child to go to. It was just that parents were either too busy working, and they didn't have time to do it. You know, so it was like all kinds of avenues. It wasn't even impoverished kids. It was parents that was working so much. They didn't even have time for the kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, this spreads like even past economic status, really, when we're thinking about our children. You know, and, you know, this young man was 17 years old. Michael Brown was, what, 19 years old?
18.
What was it, Swisher Sweets? Yes, Swisher Sweets with him. It's a beer with this. Eric Garner, selling cigarettes, loose cigarettes. And so African-American life, as we see, has been dumbed down to Swisher Sweets and beer and cigarettes.
Beer. Yeah.
You know, like, you have insurance as a business to file an insurance claim. Now, that's what you have. You got a business. So why take a life if you can file an insurance claim?
I don't think that when he did what he did, I don't think he did it because, like, he was black or anything. I think he did what he did because he feels he's above the law. I know, if I don't live on the street, but I know that I can go in that store and buy some loose cigarettes because they sell them. Why don't the people that say that that's against the law not know what they do? They do know what they're doing. What it is they get all these millions of dollars from, and it's not just one store. It's a chain of them. It's a franchise of illegal businesses that are permitted to set up, and then they probably give kickbacks or something to Amy Wyrick, who's the DA, or whoever else is supposed to be blowing the whistle. I think that's who's in charge of crime in the state of Tennessee and Memphis, is our elected district attorney. Well, people like her, she's not concerned about that because they pay her, or they do whatever so they can hire Blake Ballin, a lawyer that won't talk to you for less than $25,000 on this type of case. They hire people like that who go to lunch with the DA and the judges and things like that. So essentially, our power is in voting, because Amy Wyrick's an elected official. Every judge is an elected official.
That's
and
true.
The people who could stop them are elected officials. So if we put people in there, you say, you know what, I don't want you to have but one convenience store in one neighborhood or on one block. Like, there shouldn't be, on Springdale, there's four stores on Springdale. And Springdale is not a major street like Hollywood or Chelsea or Jackson. Springdale is a street that runs from
Jackson Avenue to Chelsea, and that's it. But you have four stores that sell the same thing, so you poisoning
a whole
community.
They said it sells the same thing. Yeah, and then they said they have like six of them in one location or something, and they sell the same exact thing in every store. They do the same exact thing in every store.
But it's not just so much what they're selling, it's a front. It's a front for what they're really doing, which is an international enterprise that reaches all the way to the Iran and the people that we supposed to be at war with back to America. And they come here with nothing, and they go to the same Social Security office on Monroe that we got to stand in the line till 7 in the morning. We got to stand in there to try to apply for a Social Security. They go to that same Social Security office, and they get a brand new Social Security number. They got A1 credit, and they can go get stores and whatever else they want because they are classified as white on their birth certificates and as by identification purposes. They ain't classified as black. If you look at the boy who killed him, Antoine, whatever, Bizarre, if you look on his police report or you pull him up in the jail to see what his race is, it says white. It says white. But if you look at them,
they don't look white.
Same way with, you know, well, they don't have anything to do with it. I'm not aware. But they making all their money in the black community. They classified as white on their birth certificates and Social Security cards.
Mm-hmm. Wow. This is something. So what would you tell the citizens of the community that's being affected by this?
You know, if I could make a blanket statement to the people, and not just the people who live in the community, the people who don't live in the community. So sometimes, you know, they drive through and they stop at the stores too. But I would say if you really understand what this movement, I speak of the new Black Lives Matter movement, not the civil rights movement, because this is kind of, I guess, a addition to a supplement from the civil rights movement, because we still ain't got free yet 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if you really know what it means when we say Black Lives Matter, you know that it's not about the race. It's about the ignorance and the fact that people refuse to acknowledge that there is a disproportionate equality when you have a black life involved, even if it deals with a homicide at a convenience store where a clerk shoots somebody. If he would have been shooting at a white man in a convenience store, do you think the police would have been called immediately? And we can't just blame the Middle Eastern people that owned the store that shot him. There were people in the community.
They said that boy laid for 2 days.
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, the one lady that testified. Yeah, the one lady that testified that, you know, saw the shooting, she said because when he ran away and she heard the clerk say, I think I shot his ass or something. She told him, I hope you did not. She actually went and, like, drove around and looked for him and didn't see him. But she never called the police because we're conditioned to be afraid of the police, which we have good right to be. But we don't call the police anymore because we can't trust them either. So what we have to do as a community is we have to police our own neighborhoods. We have to take back our communities. We have to offer safe spaces for children, for homeless.
Well, we were safer then.
And we're, because
our neighborhoods were safer then.
Yeah, I don't believe in calling the police because I don't know that I can trust the police. I'm not saying all police are bad, but in a situation like that, if there was some understanding between the business merchants and the community, that never would have happened. Not saying he wouldn't have had the altercation, but he would have never raised his gun at no child playing intentionally or nothing because I don't play like that. And if they knew how close I lived here, they would have never done that because I'm always looking to shut something down that needs to be shut down. And I had already had a prior incident with not the same store, but another store. And the more I talk to the more activists and the more people in the community, we all done had altercations with these people. So much so that it's just the norm for them to talk, like, excuse my French, but to talk shit to people. And it's like, you don't go in Walmart and spending money every day or Kroger or wherever, and people are disrespecting you. You're too comfortable.
Exactly.
You're too comfortable with your disrespect. Now, not all of them, because there's some, like, there's some Africans or whatever that are very respectable. But some of these, the majority of these people who, these younger Middle Easterns, they got so much money, they arrogant. And they think that that's cool, because that's the American culture. I got money. I can do what I want, you know. I see the popos behind me. I ain't going to stop. That's the kind of culture and music that people are listening to. So they think it's acceptable for you to be so disrespectful and that you can talk any kind of way. Well, the talking led to action where he thought that he could up a gun and then run out the store and run down the street in America. This ain't about black lives. This is about human lives. And we got to do something. And there's only one option for me and the people that I'm dealing with, and that's to rise up.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, dear guys, this has been T. Moses. She's with Black Lives Matter of Memphis. Give them your contact information.
If you want to reach our chapter, you can reach us at www.blacklivesmattermemphis.org. That's www.blacklivesmattermemphis.org. If you want to follow us on Facebook, look for the yellow woman with the fist and the check, the official check by our name. If you want to email us, you can email us at info@blacklivesmattermemphis.org. We're looking for anyone who wants to support or strategize with us on this Rise Up campaign. It's got 7 project CDCs to make it happen. And restructuring some that were in existence that are non-existent, because there are a lot of things that we want to help the community do, as well as inform them of, you know, options that they have that they probably don't know. So please contact me. I'm P. Moses.
All right, guys, there you have it. It's been another show of BYTV where we have brought you the verdict this Tuesday night with P. Moses of Black Lives Matter Memphis. Guys, get in contact with her. Get involved in your community. Like she said, it's time to rise up. And, hey, I think I do have that song by Andrea Day. I'm going to go out with 2 songs, though. I kind of want to go back to, you know, the good old days about where we came from. And just to remind you of how it used to be back in the day. But before we do that, I want to go out with, I'm going to do Andrea Day, Rise Up, since P. Moses talked about that. And maybe it'll motivate you to rise up. And, hey, if we rise up together, we can move the mountains and these stores that are not investing back into our communities. We can change that because, hey, together we can make a difference. All right, so let's unify. And let's make a difference in our communities. All right, this has been Sherry Renee's Brand. Enjoy. Andrea Day, rise up, because it's that time.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter. But I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains. We gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. The silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move, I won't stay. Bring it to its feet.
And that was Andrea Day. And hey, I'm going to get back and kick back with my country roots. So here's Alan Jackson, Where I Come From. Because, yeah, I'm a country girl down at heart. So enjoy Alan Jackson.
Lots of rolling wheels and shifting gears round that Jersey turnpike. Barney stopped me with his gun 10 minutes after midnight. Said, sir, you broke the limit in this rusty old truck. I don't know about that accent, son. This, where did you come from? I said, where I come from, it's cornbread and chicken. Where I come from, a lot of front porch sitting. Where I come from, trying to make a living, working hard to get to heaven. Where I come from, lost south of Detroit City, I pulled in this country kitchen. Try their brand of barbecues, I said finger licking. I paid the tab and the lady asked me how'd I like my biscuit. I'll be honest with you, ma'am, it ain't like mama fixed it. Cause where I come from, it's cornbread and chicken. Where I come from, a lot of front porch picking. Where I come from, trying to make a living and working hard to get to heaven. Where I come from, I was chasing sun on 101 somewhere around Ventura. I lost a universal joint and I had to use my finger. This tall lady stopped and asked if I had plans for dinner. said, no thanks, ma'am. Back home, we like the girls that sing soprano. 'Cause where I come from, it's cornbread and chicken. Where I come from, a lot of front porch sitting. Where I come from, trying to make a living and working hard to get to heaven. Where I come from.
That was a little bit of Alan Jackson. I like that. I like some country music going out tonight. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure you follow us, follow our website, visit our website, blog, or bytvlive.com. Visit the website, guys, follow the show. And until next week, hey, if no one's told you that they love you, we're telling you we love you. We love you. And motivate somebody. Live more, laugh more, and hey, enjoy your Tuesday. We're out.